to another episode of the Forecast F1 podcast. And while previously during this season I've already announced a historic episode, that was mostly because of the full 100% score that we had in the game, I think we are about to record another historic episode, and this time because of the first Formula One race win for Lando Norris. And we're here, well, not right after the Miami Grand Prix, we're recording a little bit later, but Sam, we've seen a great weekend, haven't we?
Absolutely. In my opinion, I think it was the best race weekend and race of the year so far, and I can't wait to talk about it. But it was, like you mentioned, a historic race because long overdue, and what a great end to a race to see Lando Norris on the podium for the first time in his first race win.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think previously we said that the Australian Grand Prix was really nice because it had a different winner than one of the Red Bulls. But in that race, we saw problems for the Red Bulls and Verstappen didn't finish the race. I think seeing a different winner while Verstappen is in the race is even much more satisfying. Because it was, well, I guess we'll get into that a little bit later. Let's first talk about the first set of sessions in the weekend, because Miami was a sprint weekend, and we started with free practice one, and then went straight into the sprint shootout, or I think we're calling it sprint qualifying this year. But yeah, I think in that session, We can say a lot of things, but I think the main takeaway there was one of the V carbs on P4, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for Ricciardo, it was not just only for the qualifying, but for the sprint as well. It was something that he very much needed at a point in time in this season where he's been struggling. And Tsunoda has been ahead of him almost every step of the way. So to be able to not only be ahead of Tsunoda, but to really make a statement finishing in fourth in the sprint qualifying and then at the end in the sprint race as well I think he finished fifth in sprint, if I recall.
No, he finished fourth. He had a sprint-long battle with Sainz for that fourth place.
That's right.
But he did manage to keep it. He actually, on the start of the sprint, he even overtook Perez on the first lap. I thought that was quite a nice battle too. You know, the two fighting basically, or at least in Ricciardo's head, I guess he's fighting for that seat. So it was nice to see. But it was both a great shootout and the sprint for Ricciardo. I think I don't want to take anything away from it, but it's also interesting to see that someone the same thing happened in China with Hamilton, and like the person who was in the spotlight for the sprint during the sprint on the same day, of course you have the qualifying for the race, that person on the spotlight drops back. I think it was Hamilton dropped back to P18 on the qualifying for China last year, and we saw the same thing happen to Ricciardo. But I think on the sprint as a solitary sort of race of this weekend, hats off to Ricciardo, a very, very good performance. And I think it was very exciting to watch him battle with Sainz, and I honestly would have thought that the Ferrari would be strong enough to overtake him. And I think throughout the rest of the weekend we saw that although overtaking was perhaps not the easiest, but it was definitely possible on this track. So again, hats off to Ricciardo.
Yeah, and I think also the one thing that I would mention when it comes to Ricciardo that we saw is that, you know, over the last several years, we haven't really seen him in the form that we had seen him in his Red Bull days, or and I'm not saying that we've seen that, but just being able to see him get advance strictly on merit for the most part, based on his skill, not because of maybe something that happened during the race that gave him also an advantage. It was simply that he was able to put on a strong sprint qualifying lap that gave him the advantage to finish in fourth. And then also during the race, you know, not only was he able to maintain that position, but like you had said, just the fact that he was defensively able to hold off Sainz regardless. And we've seen several times over as of the last several years with Ricciardo that even whether it's with McLaren or where he currently is, he seems to struggle with being able to maintain his position. He always finds a way to drop back in some capacity, and sometimes it's beyond his control. So to be able to see him actually be in the race, finish in fourth, strictly this result was based on merit and merit alone. And I think that that is definitely a satisfying result for him.
What did you make of that turn one accident or incident, or the Hamilton versus, well, the two Aston Martins, and of course that led to to Lando Norris being taken out. How did you look at that whole situation there? What happened?
Well, look, I mean, I know that Alonso on the radio, he expressed later on that he wasn't happy with Hamilton's decision on that turn. In my opinion, I thought that Hamilton was just racing. I mean, he was trying to fight for he did sneak in there, but I also don't think that it was something that warranted a penalty or anything like that. I did think that it was racing. He was just trying to maximize what he had in terms of space to get ahead, as any driver would. But, you know, obviously Alonso wasn't a fan of that situation. For Norris, it ended up being his retirement, so he wasn't able to really get anywhere. And for McLaren as well, for the weekend, you know, interestingly enough, they came into this weekend with this was their most significant upgrade package on the cars this weekend alone. And clearly we saw going into later during the race how much of a difference that it had made, specifically for Norris. I believe that Lando had the full package and Oscar came in this weekend with just half of it, but for both of those cars, you saw a difference. And so going back into the sprint with him retiring, we weren't able to really see the potential that it would have had. Obviously, seeing it in the race, but in the sprint race, it could have really made even more of a significant difference in terms of the outcome for the race had he had stayed in. But again, like I said, I think that ultimately when it came to Hamilton, it was a racing incident. But what were your thoughts?
Well, back on what you're saying with the upgrade packages for McLaren, I think on the sprint shootout, I got very, very excited in the first two sessions where Norris took both SQ1 and SQ2. So I really thought that, whoa, there's really something happening, like the upgrades we saw last year in Silverstone in Austria with the McLaren making such a huge improvement. And I think it's very exciting for McLaren as a team, because it seems like every time they come with updates, it seems like, I guess the updates, or I guess the correlation between what they see in the wind tunnel and what happens in real life is very high. And I guess that can bring some excitement for us for, you know, the later part of this season, because if they continue to develop at this rate, only very exciting things can happen. And it would be funny to think that Norris, because of not really driving the sprint shootout or the sprint itself, being able to focus on the race, although on the other hand he only qualified P5 for the race. But I'm going ahead in time. So that Hamilton incident, it was funny because on the one hand, I completely understand Hamilton. Like, he saw the gap, he went for it, that's perfectly fine. He did miss the apex a little bit, which made it difficult for the four cars to like turn the corner, like being alongside each other. On the other hand, if you pause the shot, you could see that actually Alonso and Stroll were already touching before Hamilton really really reached to be alongside Alonso. So the Alonso comment of Hamilton coming in like a bull, I you know, we're used to this by Alonso. I do love him for that, but I think it was slightly exaggerated. And
Alonso exaggerating on the radio? Never.
Well, there's a few drivers who
absolutely
do that. But that wouldn't be the only battle Hamilton would be fighting. I mean, I think that only introduced the type of sprint that it would be for Hamilton. looking at the rest of the rest of the sprint and his fight with Magnussen, I think it's that was a sprint long battle, just as Sainz and Ricciardo. Although the Sainz and Ricciardo was quite was free of incidents, let's just say. The Hamilton Magnussen not so much, and there was I think there were quite a lot of I think it started with they were battling already for a while, and then at some point Magnussen skipped the chicane, which was actually interesting because he after the race mentioned that Hülkenberg did that prior a couple of laps earlier, which made him lose DRS to Hülkenberg, which meant that Magnussen was on his own fighting Hamilton. But of course Hülkenberg was not going to drop back and give Magnussen DRS again. He just wanted to create a gap, and from that moment onward Magnussen decided that his objective of the sprint would be to keep Hamilton at bay, and Hamilton overtook him a couple of times, but then Magnussen just came in like a torpedo on several
not
occasions,
like a bull?
Trying to whatever you want to call it. It was I completely understand he did it, you know, and I've heard mixed reactions, and Magnussen was very honest about it after the sprint race. But I think that as long as it's, you know, of course it's not really nice to see, especially not if you're a Mercedes or a Hamilton fan. On the other hand, we say so often that Formula One is a team sport, so actually if you look at it for the Haas, this is not the first time that they score points really as a team. And I see a lot of F1 drivers who are not willing to give up their own race for their teammate. I think there's quite a lot of teams where that would not happen. We've seen that. And actually Haas is a team that really puts their... they all put their heads together and they make it work. And they do score points because of it. And, you know, if you look at it, they already have a fair amount of points on the board. Of course, VCARP has more points because... Actually, with Ricciardo performing that well in the sprint and Tsunoda having a amazing race on the Sunday, they are actually scoring points too. But it seems like VCARP and Haas are the only teams from, let's say, the second tier teams. I don't want to call them second tier, but let's say the teams that have more problems scoring points. They're the only two that really seem to be able to do so. And I think we said it even on after the first or the second race, that prior to the start of the season, also because of the announcements of the new team boss, but I don't think anybody was really expecting Haas to be scoring points like they are. So hats off to them too.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a very challenging weekend for Magnussen. And I will say that, you know, playing a little bit of a devil's advocate here, although I completely understand and I believe it's admirable to be able to compromise your race to protect the team overall, because Magnussen has faced so many penalties as he has, he's now in a situation where he could potentially face a race ban. And I think that protecting the team is, like I said, admirable, but to what extent? If you get into a situation where you're just gaining so many penalties that you end up potentially putting yourself in that position and then you don't race for a weekend at all, that could also lead to a detrimental outcome for the team, and or maybe not necessarily detrimental, but one where maybe the advantage doesn't outweigh the disadvantage, so to speak, in the long run. So,
well, perhaps not for Magnussen, but then again for Haas as a team, if they are planning next year to have Behrmann in the car, then if Magnussen gets a race ban and they're able to put Behrmann in for one race, that would not be bad for Behrmann to already get a feel.
I see
for
your
team
strategy thoughts. Okay.
Yeah, so I don't think Haas minds it too much. Magnussen might, I understand, but I don't know.
Okay,
and, you know,
I see
it's
where
also,
you're going.
You know, you give penalty points, and you get a race ban after 12 penalty points. That's just all part of the game, and you can play that game the way. Yeah, I don't. You know, I actually, as a viewer, I wouldn't mind to see somebody else in the car for one race. So, and that would also Yeah, it will definitely. I think there's already pressure on Magnussen's shoulders because he doesn't have a contract for next season. So imagine if Behrmann would be in the car for one race and performs relatively well, and then Magnussen coming back the race after, even having more pressure. I don't know. I like to see these things. I want to see people perform under pressure.
Yeah, I mean, but you also just picture on a personal level for Magnussen, you compromise your race. You put yourself in a position where you face a potential race ban, and then you lose your seat regardless for somebody else. I mean, it is the nature of the business. It's the nature of F1. We know that. It's cutthroat. But man, that would be a tough one.
So I already touched on the V-carbs, and what I just wanted to go into was the later stage of the battle during that sprint. Actually, one thing I found very interesting was that I think Sargeant did too, but Tsunoda drove that sprint on the soft tires and was able to, well, in the end was able to score a point. Of course, that also had to do with the Hamilton penalty. Hamilton got a penalty for speeding in the pit lane. I think it was during the safety car, and that demoted him to P9 in the end, with Tsunoda then finishing in P8. But they had a good battle between Magnussen and Hamilton having that battle, and then at some point Tsunoda took it away, was in P8, but then Hamilton got back to position, got the penalty. But all in all, I think that that was it was interesting to watch, and perhaps like we were saying, of course Magnussen there really, if he wouldn't have battled with Hamilton as much, Hamilton probably wouldn't have had such an issue staying ahead of Tsunoda like he did initially, but with that penalty probably would have still been demoted to P9. But a great result for Tsunoda, of course, you know, maybe not so much in the picture during the sprint because of Ricciardo scoring all those points, but I thought it was quite the performance. He didn't have a good qualifying, but he made up for it in the sprint.
Absolutely, I completely agree.
And actually, going from the sprint into the race, it was interesting that I already mentioned that Ricciardo wasn't able to get out of Q1, and Tsunoda actually did. There were a couple of other I think most notably, you know, where the Mercedeses had trouble getting into Q or SQ3 during the sprint qualifying, it was the Aston Martins who had that very same issue for the qualifying of the race, and actually Alonso only on P15, Stroll actually out qualifying him. That also doesn't happen too often, but both Aston Martins out in Q2, and that was a bit disappointing for them, I suppose.
Yeah, there was a few interesting things I would take from the from qualifying that also translated in some respects into the race, but just highlighting qualifying, I would say number one, Ferrari. I believe that their pace, even in the race itself as well, I would take it back to the sprint race with Leclerc. Like their pace, the gap between Verstappen and Ferrari has definitely shortened a bit. So that's interesting. And then obviously they did all right during qualifying, finishing in second and third. McLaren again, we're starting to see the improvements definitely pay off when it comes to the car. And I would also say for Alpine as well. I mean, we've seen over and over again this season them struggle with a lot of things, not just with the car, but with management, with the garage itself. So the fact that they made it beyond, I mean, both of them qualified in 12th and 13th, and actually in the race, they didn't have a bad race. Now, mind you, and I'll just mention this now since we're talking about it, or since I am putting this out there. I nearly chewed my nails completely off in the first two laps of the race, watching Alpine side by side throughout that. I mean, both those drivers did not want to let up. Now, that's very exciting as a viewer to be able to watch them do that. However, I can only imagine how stressful it must have been to be an actual to be watching that from Alpine side and hoping that both drivers do not end up DNFing each other in the race. But again, very exciting to see those two just battling literally neck and neck throughout that. I mean, going around the first few turns, that was definitely an exciting thing to see. So,
It's
yeah,
great
I
for you to
think.
bring that up because I actually kind of forgotten about that. We're recording a little bit later, as I said, but you're right. I was at the tip of my couch too watching that. It was amazing that they didn't take each other out. Great racing, and I think Alpine, although that was under different management, but we've seen, well, when Alonso was still driving there, Alonso and Ocon also had these very, very tight battles. And I think it's great that they actually let one another race, and you can see that brings great excitement, of course, at great risk for the team. But in the end, you know, it's racing. This is what we all want to see, and we get to see it. So yeah, that was very exciting indeed. I completely agree. And actually, later on during the race, watching how Ocon was doing, of course, there was a lot of focus on what happened at the forefront, you know, at the first few positions. But actually, it was very interesting to see the race of Ocon and how he, I think, throughout the whole race, had been looking at scoring a point or 2 points. So yeah, for the Alpine, definitely some positive takeaways there. I fully agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And he also battled Alonso during the race as well,
Yeah, you're right.
for a bit. But being able to earn that point, I think, is definitely a positive result that Alpine can take, given the historically what has been a very difficult season at this point. I would also say that, I think translating into the race, because there's so much to talk about when it
There
comes to
is
the race.
indeed.
I mentioned this at the very beginning when we started this, that in my opinion, it was the best race of the season, hands down. And did I anticipate going into this weekend that if you were to tell me that it was going to be Miami Grand Prix that I would be looking at saying it was the most exciting race? I wouldn't have thought so. But to see how everything unfolded, and I feel like it was a perfect storm of several things happening all at once that made it so exciting when it comes to the race. We touched on Alpine. You have the two drivers. I mean, the first few laps were so exciting. There were so many things going on. I actually had to pause and rewind just to go back and catch up to some of the things that were happening. But you know, we've touched on Alpine. You also have at the very beginning Perez just making a very, very bold move that potentially could have been disastrous for Red Bull because he almost took out Verstappen. You
Well,
also
he
have a
almost
sit.
took out everyone there, not
He
just
almost took out
Verstappen. I mean,
everyone.
it was quite tight with Sainz and Leclerc too. And of course, it had to do with the poor start of Leclerc, which gave him the gap to try and squeeze in. But you can't really call this a squeeze. It was, I know what it was, but he was putting his contract on the line there, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. And, you know, I think that also adds to an element of excitement when it comes to these race battles because you have a lot of drivers that are up for contract. You have a lot of drivers fighting for a seat. You have inner turmoil between in garages like Alpine, for example. So you have all these, like I said, a perfect storm. You have all these things happening all at once, and you also have a lot of positive things happening. So I mean, when you take a look at McLaren, I would say McLaren and Ferrari, you see two teams that actually have found a way to definitely eat away at the gap, the significant advantage that, at least for this weekend, that Red Bull typically has. I mean, we've seen it time and time again where if we're looking at Max, if he's on pole right off the start, the advantage that he is able to, the lead that he is able to increase in a matter of less than 10 laps typically is substantial. And during the sprint race, we saw that the gap between himself and Leclerc, I believe, was about 2, maybe 3 seconds at best. When you have
3.37, but you're right.
Yeah.
That I think was already an indicator that it was going to be much closer during this weekend. After the sprint race, I mean, how often have we not seen that even in a sprint with only like a third of the distance, we see Verstappen create a gap of 13, 14 seconds. But it being less than 4 and Leclerc being able to follow the Red Bull that well, I think that was already an indicator that the race could potentially be more interesting. But of course, that was after the sprint, not prior to the weekend. So I agree with what you said there previously that like going into this weekend, we didn't know. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think that then with McLaren, what was really interesting was looking at the data later on from the race result, the McLaren car, Norris's specifically, was actually performing better than Max's in terms of the track itself. Now, mind you, Max did take out that bollard at one point in time, and Red Bull had mentioned the fact that it had, as a result, the car had suffered some damage, and there's no doubt that it obviously did, but the damage itself was not significant enough to create such a decrease in his speed. And even prior to that, there was an indicator that the McLaren was the faster car. So regardless of the situation, I mean, I think it's still, at this point, one track. We still have a lot of racing to be determined, a lot more situations where cars can have upgrades and things can happen that can change the narrative here. But ultimately, to see a race that was highly competitive and across multiple cars, but it was incredibly exciting. But just going back to Norris, I think also the strategy that McLaren had for him, and also the safety car, definitely that situation, being able to change his tires, come ahead, these were all things that helped attribute to his race. The last few laps that he had, I was getting flashbacks of Russia, and I was just hoping, I mean, though it was sunny, there was no rain, and I was just hoping, please, just no mistakes, nothing to happen, because it really was, at the end of the day, his race to lose at that point. He had a significant advantage and in terms of lead. And I think, you know, for him coming out on top as a race win, you could clearly see the elation, not only with the team, but with all the drivers. Everybody was really happy to see him finally achieve that status. It's been a long time coming. He is one of the, in my opinion, one of the best drivers on the grid. And so now he has a car that's giving him the capability to really compete at the top. And so when you see Ferrari with that have eaten into the gap, you see McLaren on the data competing with the Red Bull, it just makes this season, looking ahead, that much more exciting, because you're thinking to yourself, you know, what else is there? And actually, Norris's engineer was being interviewed later on, and he had mentioned the fact that they were not expecting to see the result in Miami, because this track doesn't normally favor their car. So if you take that into account as well, I mean, how much more powerful are they going to be as a team going into a track that actually even more so favors the car? So, yeah. I think it was definitely an exciting situation.
Yeah, if you look at the previous season, then McLaren was usually quite good in the high speed tracks with high speed corners, and actually Miami does have quite a lot of slow speed corners. So it was interesting that they were performing that well on Miami specifically. And regarding the later stage of the race, I wasn't really afraid for Norris for rain, but more for, there was quite a lot of cars on the track still battling with one another, and that could have caused something like a safety car or a red flag or something like that. But in the last few laps, it was clear that even if there was going to be a safety car, it would finish under the safety car. And Verstappen didn't have the speed to keep up with Norris. So even with the restart, he probably wouldn't have been able to. But that would have been, that would have been one way to still lose it. So it was very exciting. And I'm not 100% sure. I haven't seen, I'm not a specialist here, but on the onboard from Perez, I really couldn't see on that first lap that he damaged or he touched Verstappen's car in any way. I think they were saying that the diffuser had some damage, but well, if anything, I wasn't able to detect that. The bollard that he took out, that might have caused something, perhaps very slight on the front wing. But all in all, like we were saying during the sprint, Verstappen already had trouble staying ahead or staying far ahead like he usually does. So it's going to be exciting to see to what extent the McLarens are really able to cling on to following the Red Bulls. And like you said, of course, you know, the safety car had a lot to do with it. Norris had the advantage of staying out, and you know, most of the cars had already pitted. So when that safety car came, he got a cheap stop, and he basically, yeah, was able from there on to stay ahead. There was another safety, or there was a virtual safety car as well, to take that Bollard off the track, which only benefited, I think it was Alonso and Ocon, and probably Magnussen, but Magnussen wasn't really in the race anymore, but those three were able to also pit under that virtual safety car, which only lasted for a very short period of time, so that they could take that Bollard off the racing line that Verstappen had had butted onto the track. But that didn't, well, I guess that benefited Ocon in the long run, it just mattered where you were on the track at that point, whether you were able to go in and do a pit stop. Talking about the McLarens, we're now focusing a lot on Norris, but let's be honest, Piastri had a great race up until the point, yes, where he got hit on his front wing by Sainz, which is another topic that we should go into, because I'm not 100% sure to what extent Sainz was really at fault there. I mean, in the end, I think Piastri was also too eager to steer into the corner and there with touching Sainz. So I don't know. I'm not 100% sure if I'm completely agreeing with that penalty. Might have to do something with the fact that if that penalty wouldn't have been given, I would have scored a lot more points in forecast. But that's, you know,
a biased,
that's besides
opinion
the point
over here.
Yeah. But Piastri had a great race. Like he had a great start. I think he moved up six positions to P3. And of course, that had something to do with the whole Perez incident. Because if you see, Perez basically slows down the two Ferraris, and then Piastri comes alongside, and he actually has quite a bold move there, like putting the gas pedal down and really taking the inside of the corner. It was a good start, and after that he even made it to P2 on lap 4. He overtook Leclerc. So Piastri had a very, very good race, very good start of the race. And he unfortunately, well, he in the end, he got fastest lap, which didn't get him a point because he finished outside the top 10. But yeah, I think both McLarens were showing a lot of signs there of improvement. So it is very exciting towards the next few races to see to what extent they can prolong this, and also to see, like you were saying, like this track was not necessarily the track where you would expected them to do so well. So it would be great to see if actually maybe on other tracks with more high speed corners, actually they would do even better. But okay, that's getting our hopes up for more win fights during the rest of the season. I guess we're all sort of waiting for that to happen, even though probably the Verstappen's already quite far ahead in terms of point scorings, but it would be great to see more races where we're not able to predict the winner beforehand.
Yeah, and I think that also, again, I just with the fact that the gap has shortened with teams, but obviously as much as the gap has shortened, it seems that there are other teams that typically we would have in that conversation that have been struggling even more so, like Mercedes. But to see it more highly more competitive at this point when it comes to the top and the podium itself, and then as we kind of advance into and get more deeper into this season, I just have a feeling that this season is just going to get even more wilder as time goes on, because with the contract situation, with so many drivers on the grid, with the, you know, the dynamic between the teams and the typical situation of obviously poaching people from the garage to other teams, it seems that it's getting even more heightened at this point. And so there's a lot of moving parts that are happening this year. And I think that as we get deeper in, I think we're going to have a lot more to talk about, even more so than we do right now. But all in all, a great weekend and fantastic result regardless, I think, for anybody. I think the majority of people were very happy to see Lando on the podium, because it's a great story to tell as well, and to see somebody and to see a team be able to get there. And you've seen the hard work and you've seen also the struggles. It's always a situation that puts a smile on your face when you see a result like that.
From the positive into the negative, what about that move from Magnussen on Sargeant?
I was going to bring up Sargeant, because I think that it's pretty evident that his seat is in question at this point on Williams, and this was his home race. And I felt like he wasn't doing terrible, but...
Well, he has another two home races, so, you know, if he makes them.
His home race, because, he's not far...
but, he's from Fort Lauderdale, right? Yeah,
so, yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, this is really his home race, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that for him, this was a situation that wasn't... Unfortunately, it wasn't something that I believe he caused. It happened, and he was the one to retire, and that's really unfortunate, because Williams has, as of recently, really kind of dropped off in terms of their performance, and so I think that's also amplified the pressure for him in a questionable position for his seat, because they need to be more competitive. And for him, he hasn't been able to meet those standards at this point. So being in his home race, there's also a lot of, obviously there's a lot of conversation about if his seat is in jeopardy, who is going to take his seat? Is this a decision that's going to take place very soon? But ultimately, I think that this race was a really important one for him to make a statement, and he wasn't able to. And I wouldn't necessarily attribute it to him himself. I think that the Magnussen incident was something that ultimately was beyond his control.
So let's have a look at forecast scores. And we had, I guess a couple of people missed playing the game because of the early deadline, because of the sprint race. But we had 768 people who played the game with an average score of 51.5 points, which is actually not that high given that it was a sprint race. But of course, given that Norris won it, there was probably not that many people who got that right. But we'll see about that in a bit. The lowest score that we had was 25.0. I think that's very similar to what we had during the race in China. I think that was 25.5 was the lowest score on that sprint weekend. We had, let's go into those that finished on the top step of the podium in the game. On P3, we have Andrej Sari from Serbia. He scored 83.9 points. We have on P2, Chris Georgiev from Bulgaria, with 85.3 points. And on P1 from Germany, Tara Schwartz, who scored 92 points. And looking at those three scores, I looked at their predictions. So I'll give away something that I should, because otherwise the quiz is not going to be fair. But actually, the winner of this weekend didn't have Norris on P1. She just scored a lot of points in the sprint race, and then she had Norris on P2 and Verstappen on P1, but that was still enough to score that many points. Our P2, Chris Georgiev, no, sorry, let me check. I don't think it's the P. I think it's the person that initially finished on P2 when we didn't know about the Sainz penalty yet. There was one person who had Norris on P1. I think it was Joshua Wilson, who finished on P2 prior to us knowing that Sainz would get that penalty, but he later dropped to place a little bit lower in the ranking, still in the top 20. But anyway, there was one person I saw that had Norris on P1, I don't know if anybody else did, but yeah, I wanted to give you that information, because otherwise it wouldn't be fair to play the game against you. But I will ask, because I always do. So how many people do you think predicted the correct podium? That I did check.
I'm going to say nobody.
Yeah, nobody did. But let's go to the sprint podium, and I'll ask you, how many people do you think had Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez on the sprint podium in that order?
I'm going to say quite
out of 768 people. Sorry?
Yeah, I'm going to say quite a few people. I'm going to go with 320.
That's you're always quite high with these estimations, I gotta say. It was but there was quite a few people, though. It was 71 people who had a correct sprint podium.
It was so way off.
That's yeah, well, you're a bit off, but you usually are with the first guess, and then later you make up for it. But we'll see about that this time. We have actually, it's funny, because a couple of races ago we had Ethan Berger, who was on P1 in the standings for the season wide competition. His brother now, Matthew Berger, is with 403 points, is now on that top step. So way to go, Matthew. And on
very
P2
nice.
And P3, we have some usual guests. Rosario Finci from France is on P2 with 396.1 points. He's been in that top three for quite a bit now. And Marina Minlu from China is on P3 with 393.4 points. So let's see how that that battle unfolds later on in the season. Sam, do you remember your predictions for... I want to hear your podiums for the sprint and for the race. Let's see if you still recall them.
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, it's been a little bit of time, so I may not be completely accurate in my in what I had, remembering it. But I do know in the sprint, I chose Leclerc to win. I know that. In the race, I believe in the sprint, I went Leclerc, Verstappen, and Sainz. In the race,
I have something else here. I'm gonna open up the app to check. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong here, but let me see. Because I thought that you went with Verstappen, Leclerc.
Well, maybe that goes to show how well my memory is. In my defense, it's been a little bit of time before we have decided to record.
That's true, but for that reason we have the app, so I can check these things. Yeah, I'm really sorry to tell you, but
I did not choose Leclerc. I thought I did go with Leclerc.
You didn't. No, you went with Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez.
Okay, well, you know, that's great. So let's move along to the race. Then why don't you tell me what I chose?
Sorry, you went with Verstappen, Sainz, Perez. I'm wrong there. But you went with Verstappen, Sainz, Perez in the sprint, and you went with Verstappen, Perez, Leclerc in the race. Actually, so did I. We had very similar predictions, to be really honest with you. Before that Sainz penalty, I would have outscored you, but after that, I clearly didn't. You scored 57.1 points if we add up the scores from the sprint and the race, and I scored 55.5. So we were very close, but you beat me this this weekend. And you were P224, I was P268. In the standings, you move up to P186, and I move down to P53. So there's still a bit of a gap between the two of us, but it's shrinking. And the next couple of races are not going to be sprint races, so there's fewer points to be scored. But I don't know. I was slightly disappointed with the Sainz penalty. I've already mentioned it because both of us would have had because we both went with P4 Leclerc, P5 Sainz. So we would have had the Ferraris on the right spot. But in the end, we didn't. There's a lot of ifs. We already heard what Verstappen thinks about the ifs in the post-race interviews. Moving on. I think it would be time to play our game, but I haven't really set up the order of things yet. So let me just do that. I think it's your time to. Is it who should be starting? I think it should be you. I'm not 100% sure. All right, I'm a little bit behind on things, as you can see. So last time, I think I predicted first how many people had Norris on P1. So it's for you to, well, think about it a little bit and guess. I already told you there's at least one person who had Norris on P1, but I have no idea if there's many others than that. So what do you think?
Well, I'm going to say because there was no... I'm going to say nobody.
Yeah, but I already told you that there's one person.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. okay, let's go with 3.
From 0 to 3?
Yeah, well, you know, might as well.
Okay, let me just...
We'll go with his number.
Things down. You're going with 3, all right. Yeah, I'm going to say 2 in that case. Although I would go for 1, but it's... Yeah, okay, I'll try to... Okay, Verstappen on P2. Well, that's going to be a tough one. I don't think there's going to be too many people who went for Verstappen on P2. But I would say probably... Well, I'm going to say 25.
Okay. I'm going to go lower than that. I'm going to say 15.
I will then... No, no, you're the one who has to go for Leclerc on P4.
That's right. Let's go with... Let's go with... I'm going to go higher. I'm going to say 47.
47. I think it must be more than that. So I'm going to go with 48. Moving on to Perez, who did finish on P4 after the Sainz penalty... I will say that there was, well, it's also not an easy one. I'll go with 35. Well, it's a tough one. Okay, I'm gonna move it up to 40.
Okay. I'm going to say, I'm going to go above you and just say 41.
All right. Then Sainz on P5, that's yours.
Let's say 22.
No, I think it must be much more than that. So I'm going to go with 23, but I think it will be more than 100. I think a lot of people will have him on P5. Anyway, we go to Hamilton on P6. I'm going to say 50.
Okay, I'm going to go higher than you on this one. I'm going to say 71.
71, all right. The next one's interesting. Tsunoda on P7, and I don't think we've even talked about it enough.
About
the
you're
race,
right.
But what a performance from Yuki! And we've talked a lot about Ricardo, but I think the P7 in the race for Tsunoda deserves more than just one mention. So I've taken my hat off already 2 times during this podcast, but I'm doing it again. Great performance by Yuki.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, absolutely great performance. He's having a really great season so far. And I don't think a lot of people would have predicted him in seventh. So I'm actually going to go with 5.
I think it's fewer than that. I'm going to go with 4. And for Russell, I'm going to say it's 55.
Okay. I'm going to go actually just below you. I'm going to say 54.
All right, 54. Then Alonso is for you.
Alonso, yeah. I'm going to say 42.
I'm going to go with 43, but I think the 42 is a good guess. We have on P10 Esteban Ocon, and that's going to be a interesting one. I don't think many people would have put him there, but I think there might be 1 or 2. I'm gonna go with 3 actually.
Okay, I think that's a fair estimate. I am going to go 4, just
okay.
About
4, which leaves us with Piastri, which didn't get anybody any points. But how many people do you think had Piastri predicted on the fastest lap? You're the one to guess first.
I'm going to guess not a lot, actually. I'm going to go with 6.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 5 then. I was going to go with 1, but because I think it's fewer than 6. But yeah, let's... okay, while I look up the scores, I would ask you to look forward to the race, which actually is 2 weeks after the after the race in Miami, but of course we're recording now in the weekend after, so it's only a week ahead in time.
Right, we are in Imola, and we actually last year were unable to be in Imola because of the flooding. So this is the return of the track. Very much looking forward to it, and always an exciting race, I think. And we are in Ferrari's home country, so I think it is going to be exciting. I know that it's going to be even more exciting given the end of the last race, and to see exactly how much more competitive it's going to be, like we've touched on in terms of the top of the podium. Are we going to see Lando competing with Max? Are we going to see Ferrari coming out strong? I think they have a lot of potential, so yeah, it's going to be nice. And that will take place on the 17th, May 17th weekend.
Okay, all right. Well, that means we're ready for scores. And Sam, I will congratulate you on the first one, because there was actually three people, it seems, that had Norris on P1, and you
no
went
way.
With three. So that's your point, and you got that one exactly right. So hats off to you too.
Yay. Went with lucky number three.
Yeah, no, that's a good start of the quiz. But I'm afraid to say that the next point will be mine, because Verstappen, there was 22 people who had him on P2. I went with 25, he went with 15, so it was quite in the middle there. But yeah, if you would have just tactically gone with 24, you would have scored the point. But you left it for me. Thanks. And P3 Leclerc, we were, yeah, well, you guessed first 47, I went with 48, I thought it might be quite a bit higher. It was 203 people.
Wow,
that's
a huge number.
Yeah, it really is, which means it's 2-1 for me. Then we go to Perez on P4, I went with 40, went with 41, that means it's your point, because it was 73 people.
Okay.
So it's 2-2. And we move on to P5 Sainz. You went with 22, I went with 23. It was 134 people. I already mentioned it might be in the hundreds. And yeah, so that will be another point for me. But it's quite a good match this time. It's 3-2. Hamilton on P6 was 109 people, which means that your 71 gets closer than my 50. So that's a point for you.
Very nice.
Tsunoda, you went with 5.
I
went with 4.
This is the interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was only 2 people who had Tsunoda on P7.
Wow.
Let me have a look who those 2 people were. I think that would be something we should mention.
I think so too.
So that was Maddox Noor from the United States, and that was Hakam Dharmavijaya from Indonesia. Those two were the only 2 people who had Tsunoda predicted on that P7 spot. So that's a point for me, though, because it's closer to the 4, and that means it's 4-3. We move on to Russell. I went with 55, you went with 54. It was 198. So that's another point for me, unfortunately for you. And it's now 5-3. Alonso.
I see where
P9.
This is going.
Oh, yeah.
We're still...
Yeah. I have 146 people here who had Alonso on P9, quite a lot. I went with 43, you went with 42. So yeah, we're 6-3, Sam. It's... yeah.
Oh, dear.
It's going to be a point for you for P10, though, because there was... Actually, 13 people that had Ocon on P10. I'm amazed by that.
Wow.
You went with 4. I went with 3. So that's your point. It's 6-4. And then we go to Piastri, and I went with 5. You went with 6. Or you went with 6. Then I went with 5. There was no one who had Piastri on fastest lap. So that means it's also closer to my prediction, which makes it 7-4, Sam.
Oh, jeez. Well... Better luck next time, as I normally
say.
Yeah,
we can put that on repeat.
At this point, yeah.
No, I'm sure you're going to beat me at some point. But yeah, it's It's been a good weekend, I think. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And looking very much forward to Imola. I think, like you said, since we didn't have that race last year, it's going to be interesting to see. I guess even more so, quite tough for example, Sargeant, who's not been driving, and for Piastri. I mean, those are the two rookies last year who haven't been on the track during an F1 race. So it's going to be more challenging for them. But very much looking forward to it. And let's see if we get to see something exciting again. I would really be up for a good battle between the Red Bulls and the McLarens and maybe even the Ferraris.
Yeah, I would very much look forward to the battles up ahead. And Imola in just a week at this point.
Can't wait.